So the reason why we have all three of you on the line with us today is to talk about the oil empires that are rising in the world. And right here in Canada, there is an oil empire rising in Alberta, where no local criticism of Klein's rogue actions on Kyoto or his other actions towards resources policies haven't made it to the mainstream media. He has the complete support of the mainstream media, so dissent is not being heard. And so we've invited Tony Hall to join us on the line. He's the founding coordinator of Globalization Studies based at University of Lethbridge and frontlining activism with Albertans for Kyoto. Tony, give us the situation on what's happening within Ralph Klein's domain there in Alberta in regards to oil, because as I stated, there's just not much coming out in terms of dissent around Klein's policies.
Well, as you know, the Kyoto Protocol represents probably humanity's most concerted effort to deal with an environmental issue through the medium of an international treaty. So Canada was really on the front line. Would Canada ratify Kyoto and contribute to making the protocol an international treaty? As it turned out, Canada did do it, but there was a big campaign in Alberta fronted by the Premier, Ralph Klein, and he was taking an anti-Kyoto position, mocking the science behind the position of the Intergovernmental Panel on Global Warming, just saying that this is goofy. He called it the goofily constructed or goofily concocted Kyoto theory. And so behind him was all the big media in Alberta, especially the newspapers owned by the Asper Empire. We've got huge concentration of media in Canada, as everybody knows, and they were just on a bandwagon. The Klein regime just has pretty well unlimited support of the commercial media. So the image conveyed to the rest of Canada and the world was that Albertans are squarely behind Ralph Klein, the premier, on Kyoto. So Tucker Gomberg, myself, Brian Johnson, we mobilized and found it, you know, very easy to get Albertans who wanted Kyoto, who want to line up with the national government and wanted ratification of the treaty. We had rallies. We discovered a document done by the Alberta government in 1990 which said that Alberta could exceed the Kyoto objectives. It could reduce CO2 emissions, and it could save money in the process. It could make money. It could be a job maker. It totally contradicted the premier's position that this is all doom and gloom and would be terrible and that there's no scientific basis for all of this. So, you know, his own government did the study, which completely contradicted its position. We haven't been able to get much coverage of that lost document in the kind of monopolistic media in the province here, but little by little the word is getting out.
Well, in addition to the support of the mainstream media in Alberta and pretty much across the country, because none of this has come out in the national media as well, what are some of the other things that are supporting Klein's activities in Alberta and on Kyoto? You mentioned in a piece that you wrote for the Winnipeg Free Press, Tony, that Alberta is an oil-rich province. What's the role of oil in the kinds of positions that Ralph Klein's taking?
Well, of course, there are big oil reserves here, but the easy-to-get oil is pretty well done. There's huge quantities of tar sands, oil sands, and huge quantities of coal. But in order to get these energy sources, well, coal is very dirty, and to get at the oil in the tar sands, it's going to create huge amounts of CO2 emissions. And Imperial Oil, which is owned by ExxonMobil, has big investments in the tar sands. So it was pretty clear that the basis of this was, you know, Alberta government trying to retain the right to do a lot of dirty polluting. ExxonMobil, retained Burson Marsteller. Burson Marsteller is the PR firm that did Bhopal, you know, when Union Carbide killed tens of thousands of Indians. They hired Burson Marsteller to make their position look less toxic, less and more acceptable. So that is the PR agency, the ad agency behind the Klein campaign. Well, and behind that is ExxonMobil, the biggest corporation in the world, of course.
Well, we also have on the line Gopal, who is the oil campaign coordinator for Project Underground. And just to tell you a bit, Project Underground supports human rights of communities resisting oil and mining exploitation. The group focuses on militarization, war, environmental devastation, cultural destruction, and catastrophic climate change. And Gopal, I heard you on an interview just a couple of weeks back talking about the largest exporter of oil to the United States and the U.S.'s ongoing warmongering towards Iraq and towards the Middle East in general, and how that warmongering is tied to its desire for guaranteeing access to oil. And just to backtrack a bit, you had mentioned in that interview that the largest exporter at the time of the interview was Canada, the largest exporter of oil to the U.S. Maybe you can draw the connections here for us. What is the relationship between what's happening in Alberta and Klein's stance on Kyoto, and who's backing him and his power position there, being the premier of a province that's very oil rich?
Yeah, it was interesting that you brought up ExxonMobil, because ExxonMobil, of course, the world's largest corporation and the largest oil company, stands to gain a lot from exploitation of Iraqi oil reserves if the U.S. were to occupy that country. As well as having a great stake in oil development in Alberta, as well as all around the planet. It has leveraged its relationship to the U.S. government considerably over the years, and most recently under the guise of the War on Terror, to increase its position to exploit oil. I think the simple fact of the matter is that the United States, with 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's oil consumption, needs to secure oil in every possible location that it can. And as far as the Middle East is concerned, with two-thirds of the world's oil reserves, the way to do that is going to be through imperial occupation. With Canada, the situation is slightly different. While Canada doesn't have huge amounts of reserves in terms of global oil reserves, it does have significant production capacity currently, and the relationship is going to be one of handshaking between corrupt politicians and deals with big oil corporations to move that oil. Alberta, a rather disturbing place in terms of oil infrastructure in North America. It's one of the few places that's exempted from flaring regulations. It's extreme abuses in terms of both the environment and the communities surrounding it. There was recently a study on gas flaring done about Alberta and showed cancer cluster rates as well as a variety of other abuses. I think for one of the important pieces that we are really trying to get out there is pointing out that oil dependence inherently degrades into violence, economic violence, cultural violence, political violence, and militarization. And you're seeing that with both in terms of the way communities are abused when corporations go after the oil in places like Colombia, Ecuador, Nigeria. You see that in terms of imperial powers like the U.S. who are dependent on the oil going after reaching the point of having to isolate countries and to ensure military domination over them.
Could I just intervene briefly and point to, Venezuela, where it's quite clear that the activism taking place there is with the backing of the United States and big oil, that the Chavez government is targeted, that the U.S. has already been caught red-handed trying to leverage and finesse a coup d'etat there.
Tony, are you trying to indicate that there's been some kind of U.S.-led coup d'etat in Alberta with Klein's presence there?
Well, wherever oil predominates, you tend to have a very tyrannical, dictatorial, totalitarian regimes. Point to Nigeria, point to Saudi Arabia, which is, an obvious puppet regime of the United States, but deeper than that, of the oil industry centered in the United States. I mean, there's obviously no commitment whatsoever to anything approaching democracy in Saudi Arabia. Why would we expect that the regime about to be set up in Iraq through, you know, through tremendous violence and destabilization of the world order, why would we expect it would be anything different than, say, what we get in Saudi Arabia? And I think I see the Klein regime, you know, they're basically untouchable. The same kind of politics prevail. We live in a one-party state in Alberta. The government never changes, and it's very corrupt.
I think one of the things that's interesting about the time we are in right now is the degree to which the United States government and the Bush administration in particular is willing to leverage its oil interests. 41 of the top administration officials come from the oil industry. Every secretary of state except for two since World War I has come from the oil industry. Under the guise of the war on terror, we've got $98 million being funneled to the Colombian military and paramilitaries to train troops to defend Occidental Petroleum's pipeline. We've got the State Department weighing in on behalf of ExxonMobil, asking the courts in the United States to throw out a class action human rights lawsuit because it would be bad for the war on terror if the finger was pointed at ExxonMobil for their human rights, their complicity with human rights abuses in Aceh, Indonesia. You've got, as you mentioned, you've got the U.S., as soon as the coup happened in Venezuela, you know, Condoleezza Rice, who has a Chevron oil tanker named after her, jumps up to say that Hugo Chavez got what he deserved. You've got, again...
And to see this happening right before our eyes, you know, just a coup d'etat underway with the U.S. clearly backing the enemies of Chavez, and, you know, it's happened again and again.
And so I think, you know, all of these pieces are connected by the simple fact that not only is the age of oil coming to an end because we must deal with the issue of catastrophic climate change, and the age of oil is coming to an end because the U.S.-driven and northern-driven dependence on it is clearly outweighing the productive capacity of the planet. So they are in a desperate drive, the oil interests and their cronies in governments, corrupt governments around the world, including the United States, especially the United States, to gain as much access as they can of oil reserves and to create a counterweight to OPEC that's driven by transnational oil corporations. And I think that's what we're seeing. And among the people hardest hit always are going to be indigenous peoples whose land is ripe for exploitation. And I'd like to bring Clayton into the conversation to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you, Gopal. I mean, like, another thing that kind of quite commonly, especially in Canada, gets left off the scope, I mean, given that all of the media in Canada is owned by the Asper media empire, you'll find that the indigenous populations, especially in Alberta, are most impacted by this unsustainable extractive industry. And also, when you take a look at the impacts and the whole reason why the world is trying to ratify this Kyoto Protocol, is catastrophic climate destabilization. And the reality of it is those most impacted by catastrophic climate change are indigenous populations who don't have the privilege or the buffering zone, the safety zone developed society holds here. You know, like for example, Ralph Klein and his family aren't going to feel as much the impacts of climate change as, say, the people living in the reservations around where all the oil development is happening in Alberta.
But I think, you've got to also acknowledge that there are indigenous people who are co-opted, who buy into the corruption of the industry, so that there are, just as Saudi Arabia is a kind of puppet regime of the United States and in the oil industry, so in Indian country, the same kind of co-optation takes place to set up puppet regimes that will, you know, be violent to the dissidents and back the interests of big oil.
Yeah, and this is the reason why we from the Indigenous Environmental Network in building our oil campaign do not work necessarily with tribal governments, because of the fact that they can be co-opted by big oil industry and other extractive industries and be exploited. It is our aim in the Indigenous Mining Campaign to look for grassroots community leaders and partner with them in mounting campaigns against oil corporations that are trying to exploit people in Indian country. And it's no different in Alberta. Yes, there are, you know, big tribes that are engaged in the oil industry. However, it is a very small elite few that are benefiting when the rest of the nation is, of course, you know, suffering these disproportionate impacts that come with engaging in the oil industry in this whole dirty game.
Well, let's talk about some of the successful actions that people can take against these oil empires. The picture that that Gopal that you've painted does seem pretty bleak, but do you have stories of successful forms of resistance against this, the kind of oil empires that we have dominating the world today and even dictating where the next war is going to be?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we can start on the large scale in terms of resistance. Costa Rica has a complete moratorium on oil and mining, exploitation and exploration. And the U.S. has tried hard to pressure Costa Rica to back down, and Costa Rica has not. And that came from grassroots mobilizing. And I think that on a large scale, you're looking at that. I think the anti-war movement has worked really hard, both in Canada, the United States, and across Europe, as well as in the Global South, to fight to expose the links between resource extraction and militarization and war. I think the anti-globalization movement, you know, oil is the lifeblood of globalization. It's 95%. It's all of industrial agriculture. It is the transportation fuel that makes it possible to, you know, cut costs and cut corners. And the anti-globalization movement has made that powerful link and looked at the way oil interests play out in the free trade area of the Americas, Plan Puebla Panama, and all of the WTO regimes and the International Energy Charter Treaty. So there has been a lot of effective resistance in both exposing the issues and confronting the industries.
Well, Gopal, I want to embrace the idea of globalization. I like the idea of having close relations with our fellow human beings. I don't want to see this dominated by the twilight regime of big oil much longer. So it seems to me we play into certain hands by allowing ourselves to be called anti-globalization. Our Kyoto campaign was for the Kyoto Treaty. This is a good example of globalization, legislated globalization, at the international level. I mean, the very interests that are calling us anti-globalization are against the Kyoto Treaty, and the Kyoto Treaty is all about a kind of environmentally, ecologically enlightened approach to globalization. Here in southern Alberta, where we got a lot of support for our pro-Kyoto rally and campaign in Lethbridge in the south, there's no oil wells around here, but there is a tremendous wind, Chinook winds, coming off the Rocky Mountains, and there is a substantial wind farm industry. We find that farmers in the area, for instance, can make $3,000 per turbine, and some farms have 30 turbines, so farmers can be making $90,000 per year just for having turbines on their land, and it's obviously a beautiful type of energy. The Pagan Nation have a big wind operation. They're investing in a wind operation, and you can clearly see that this is, you know, extremely viable, and there are alternatives to the regime of the twilight antiquated technology of big oil, and it's very thrilling when you can start to see the dawning of a new time for humanity.
I think you bring up a really good point, which is that any kind of meaningful grassroots globalization, anything that actually brings people closer together in a way that's equitable and fair and is about sharing resources in ways in which communities actually have control over them and benefit from them, is actually that kind of meaningful globalization is suffocated by the corporate consolidation of power globally. And you know,
which is all about fences and divisions between people. It's nothing about to
and
do
new,
with freedom.
And new boundaries and new borders being drawn. And I think we can't forget that a big part of U.S. Interests in the Middle East very seriously will result in redrawing of borders, the way in Afghanistan the U.S. has built has rebuilt the warlord system to keep people fighting, so that to smooth the way for all resource manipulation. And I think this is another kind of core issue that we need to look at, the way the divide and rule methodology is so effectively employed by transnational oil corporations and their government backers, particularly in the United States.
It's very revealing how much they love the warlord organization of society. I mean, the way capitalism has been set up, it seems, what is it but a bunch of warlords bashing each other.
And again, we come back to Ralph Klein, Canada's own oil empire out in Alberta. One of the things, again, Gopal, that came up in your interview that you did previously with Pacifica's Peace Watch was the whole notion of U.S. interest in Iraq. If Saddam Hussein was growing broccoli underground and didn't have all that oil supply, then they wouldn't be quite interested. I wonder if the same holds true for Alberta, Tony. If there was just broccoli growing there in the ground rather than oil, would Klein be less powerful?
Well, it's very interesting to see how Klein and George Bush line up, and how both are anti-Kyoto, both are puppets of the oil industry. When it comes to the war in Iraq, and I keep hearing this phrase, some PR phrase, weapons of mass destruction. Hey, where are the weapons of mass destruction centered? The United States is way ahead of any other power in the world in concentrating weapons of mass destruction. I think, it's important that we get inspectors, Canadians of good conscience, or maybe work through the UN to inspect the weapons of mass destruction that are housed gosh knows where. What's going on in the biotechnology, biological warfare in the United States? What's going on in chemical warfare research in the United States? How are the universities involved? We need we need to transfer the attention so that we get weapons of mass destruction looked at and scrutinized where they're concentrated, which is in the United States.
Yeah, one of the things that we say here at Project Underground is this isn't about the axis of evil, this is about access to oil. About the axis of evil, and we were concerned about weapons of mass destruction, as you said, we'd be searching in the United States, right in our backyard here in the Bay Area, Lawrence Livermore Weapons Lab. If we were concerned about terrorism, we'd shut down the School of the Americas, the largest terrorist training camp in the world, run by the U.S. federal government in the eastern United States.
They changed the name, but not the content.
Yeah, not the project. If we were really concerned about threats to democracy, we'd stop providing billions of dollars in U.S. tax aid to fund the Israeli occupation or supporting repressive regimes around the planet, including Nigeria, Indonesia.
And we have war crimes tribunals for what happened in Guatemala, where 200,000 Mayan Indians were killed with U.S. backing largely to clear way for oil exploitation.
Exactly.
So, again, it all comes back to oil. Thank you all for bringing this oily perspective on so many issues, from Kyoto, Ralph Klein's regime in Alberta, to the ongoing war in Iraq. And
well, thanks for lubricating the discussion, Gretchen.
Thank you very much, Tony. I just want to invite Clayton and Gopal to maybe offer any last words or even information that you would invite people to take a look at if they want to inform themselves deeper on the issues around oil in the world today.
Well, I think that one important thing that people in Canada need to understand about Kyoto Protocol is it in no means meets the actual needs that the Earth has to return back to some healthy to a healthy environment, so to speak. At the Earth Summit in Johannesburg this summer, it was discussed that we need to actually reduce our emissions by 80% to, really deal with catastrophic climate destabilization. And, I mean, there were proposals brought forth by countries like Brazil calling for a 10% reduction in emissions from countries around Mother Earth. However, this was, of course, shut down. So, yes, it's a good thing that Canada has made the move and joined the rest of the world.
Just to start.
States, to to, lower their emissions to the Kyoto Protocol. However, you know, everybody needs to understand that, you know, it's really, really necessary that they have to really change their own lifestyles. People need to stop driving around in their SUVs, stop driving everywhere, you know, get up and walk somewhere. There's really, you know, you really got to take a look at your lifestyle and understand that, you know, people all over the world are suffering and the insulated kind of, you know, way of life that we have in Canada and in the United States.
I would encourage people who want to get more information, you can go to our website, which is www.moles.com. I would also add that this is a critical time for all of us. We need to be demanding that our governments invest in clean, safe, renewable energy technologies. We need to be calling out the corruption in our own governments and exposing the pretense of democracy, particularly here in the United States, with the level of corporate corruption that goes on. I think this is, while it is a scary time, and I don't mean to sound gloom and doom, it also is an incredible opportunity for us to demand a true democracy and to make some serious moves in that direction.
Please check out IEN's website, too, if you get a chance, people, at www.ienearth.org.
And that was Clayton, who is working there with Gopal, both with Project Underground. And again, that website is moles.com.
.org.
It is .org.
Yes.
Okay.
Say the site again, just so I can make sure I get it.
It's moles.org.
Okay.
moles.
Like the underground critter.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the underground critter. We also just set up a new website called Chevron Toxico.
Oh, like, wow.
Toxico, it's Toxico.
Yeah.
And that is .com or .org, and you can go there and check out some good stuff on Nigeria, Richmond, California, and Ecuador.
And Tony, I'm going to suggest for people to check out alberta.indymedia.org if they want to check out what's happening in terms of the information that's not getting out in the mainstream media around resistance to the oil empire rising in Alberta.
We did a little video called The TP and the Turbine, TP, one word, and you'll find that on the web at the Indie Media sites in Alberta and Vancouver.
Well, thank you all again for joining us. I really appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gopal. Thanks, Clayton.
Thanks, guys. Great work.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep up the good work.